I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. We're back with another episode of The Stacks, a podcast all about books. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and today for The Stacks Book Club, we're discussing Work Party by Jacqueline Johnson. And to help us do that, we have Callie Cholodenko, who is the founder of Something Social, a social media and marketing company. There are no spoilers today, just a frank discussion of the trials and triumphs of creating your own company and being a working woman in 2019. You can connect with Callie and Something Social in the show notes, and you can find details of everything we talk about on today's episode in that link as well. Make sure to link up with The Stacks social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter, or check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. If you're following us, you'll never miss out on upcoming events, fun giveaways, and more. If you love The Stacks and want to support the work we're doing here, go to The Stacks Patreon page. That's patreon.com/thestacks. That's a place where you can contribute to the work we're doing on the show and get perks for yourself, including inside access like our virtual book club and more. To join The Stacks back, go to patreon.com/thestacks. Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts and that you leave us a rating and a review. It goes a long way to helping the show reach new audiences. Okay, let's dive into The Stacks Book Club discussion of Work Party by Jacqueline Johnson with Callie Cholodenko. All right, you guys, we are back again today for The Stacks Book Club. We're going to be discussing Work Party, How to Create and Cultivate the Career of Your Dreams by Jacqueline Johnson, who's the CEO and founder of Create and Cultivate. We're joined again by the lovely Callie Cholodenko, who is a social media maven. Her company is Something Social, which she founded and is the creative director of. Callie, welcome back to The Stacks.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yay. I'm so excited to talk to you about this book. We'll just start where we always start, and then I'll kind of circle back. So what did you think of Work Party?
Well, I was very excited to read Work Party. Jacqueline Johnson is somebody that I've known since early on in my career and has been, you know, somewhat of a mentor and just someone that I've always kind of looked to for, okay, like how's she doing it and what was that move that she made? I feel like she's me, but like a few years ahead of me. So, so I was really excited to read it. And I really liked it because it was very relatable. Mm-hmm. I think it was very relatable as a business owner, but also I could imagine it being very relatable as somebody who is just starting their career or hasn't decided what they wanted to do yet. And it was very honest. And yeah. I think that some of the points, which we'll get into, and some of the things that she talks about are important for people to hear whatever place they are in their career journey. So.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. So when I started the book, I kind of was like, I hate this. Her tone or like her voice is like very, she was like a lot of like hashtag this and like,
she has these like little pauses where she like interjects. And I found some of that to be like kind of irritating at first. Once I got used to that, I actually really ended up liking the book, which surprised me because normally I'm like, this is annoying. Like I hated How to Be a Badass.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of like that the whole time. And I didn't really feel like she had that good of advice to me. But like this, I actually felt like there was some interesting advice. And I thought she repackaged advice that I'd heard before in like a different way that I thought worked. And I also found it to be pretty accessible. Like it was a quick read. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like work to me, which I really liked. But in the beginning, I have to say, I was like, oh my God, how am I going to finish this book?
Well, it's funny you bring up the voice note because that's something I've heard my whole life is like I have a Valley Girl voice. And mm-hmm. I know like I've gone back and listened to podcasts that I don't that I've done and I'm cringing because I'm like, oh my God, how do I sound this way? And it's actually been like a very conscious, concerted effort of mine to change the way that I sound. So we'll see how I do on this one. but it's funny because when I started it, I noticed the same thing. I was like, wow, this, okay, here we go. But I think because I have empathy for that, I was like, you do your thing, girl.
But is that how she talks in real life? Mm-hmm. She really like talks in like da-da-da hashtag and like da-da-da.
I think the hashtags were an added element for the story. Okay. And, you know, sometimes I wonder as I'm reading books oftentimes or listening to podcasts or consuming any sort of media, YouTube videos especially, I think to myself, okay, was there a very specific audience demographic in mind for this? Because I've played into that too, where, you know, I'm watching something and they're like these animated caricatures of themselves and doing these like, hello, or like whatever that thing is. And I'm like, okay, there has to be something that this is working for because all these YouTubers talk this way. So I would venture to guess that there was a concerted effort to do that, keeping in mind a certain type of demographic and or knowing that that's what they're used to from the YouTube world.
Right. Yeah. I wonder about that because I'm like, that's not going to age well.
Right.
This book, I don't know that this book will be, even though some of the information in it I think is really good and will age well, I think the tone or like the voice of it is not going to.
And I think this book too is very timely. Like it definitely is very current.
Yeah.
There's a lot of current events that it talks about, a lot of kind of like where we are right now. One thing that I loved, which we can talk about later, is just how much she, you know, shared other female entrepreneurs and their stories. I thought that section was amazing. But that too, like it'll be interesting to see, okay, in 5-10 years, where all those businesses and then what is it like to go back and listen or hear or read where they were at this point.
Right. And are those women still at those companies? Yeah. They started new companies.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I thought that stuff was really good. She had like one of the co-founders of Away and the founder of Bando. Mm-hmm. Is that how you say it? Bando?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Bando. And she had Ellen Bennett, who has the apron.
Yes.
And she had, I don't know, she had a bunch.
Allie Webb, Dry Bar.
Yeah. So that was like, I did really like that part. And she does do a good job of kind of like, she does like a little like Me Too section, which I thought was interesting. And she talks a lot about her own like personal story, which some of that I didn't really care about, but I felt like it made sense why she did it to kind of like create a narrative in the book, like to create a structure where it's like you're following her from where she started to where she is now. So you see that it's like this journey. I just didn't particularly care about her journey so much as her, like, I don't know, like her breakup. Like I was like, okay,
right.
Like I don't need this.
Well, I think that
her business breakup I was interested in.
I think that there's, I was just going to say, there's personal journey and professional journey. And this book had a lot of both of those things.
Right.
And again, I think, you know, it's very easy to look at somebody now and go, I'll never get there, or I can never get to that point, or they had funding, or they had this, or they had that, you know, whatever thing that you've made up in your head about why you can't do what this person has done. And I think by sharing the journey of, okay, no, I got let go, or this person, you know, another business, women-owned business in Los Angeles is 901. It's a hair salon by Nikki and Rihanna. And they share their story all the time because they had funding and they had an investor. And like the week that their lease was starting, they pulled out and they were like, great, we're going to put all of our savings into this. And, you know, plan B is to literally sleep in our salon. But I think it's important for people to hear things like that because it's not always peaches and puppy dogs, like getting from point A to point Z. And so what I liked that she shared was some of the hardships.
Yeah. I like some of the, I like the business stuff. I didn't care about her personal stuff. And I'm sure some people, cause I didn't know her. I didn't know Create and Cultivate, and I didn't know Jacqueline Johnson. So for me, I was like, I don't care. But I feel like if you follow her, cause I did look up her social media and she has a big following, and like Create and Cultivate has a big following. So if you are engaged with her on social, I understand why you might be like interested in that part of her life too, because like you might know about her husband, or like you might know about her dog, which I was like, I don't know, like
or you're looking at someone who, like you said, you have that familiarity with, and you're, it's kind of this like voyeuristic thing that happens these days with influencers and all these different, you know, avenues of, you want to know how they did what they did, but not just that, you want to kind of know like, oh, okay, so she was dating this guy, and like, oh, he did it and he screwed her over, so there's a little bit of the drama, I think, that you know,
like
people
like a few years ago when she was like posting about like having stressful times, and that must have been when she was selling the company.
So
I get it, it just didn't, for me I was like, meh. But I am more interested in her. I'm like, maybe I'll follow her, we'll see. I'm very stingy with my follows.
Picky, gotta be picky.
Okay, so let's talk kind of about kind of like the content of the book. You and I are both business owners. Yours is a bigger, more successful, longer running business. Mine is a baby podcast, but that's fine. Let's talk about like what it was like for you to start a business. Like you, we talked a little bit about it last week. You worked at another company for 6 months. Then you were like, I can do this. And you did it. But like what would, if you could go back now to yourself at 23, what's something that you would change about how it started? And what's something that you are like, I'm so glad that I did this in the beginning?
So I think for me, one thing that I had to get, I really had to get over the hump of, I don't know how to do this, or I've never done this. And there's two sides to that. On the one hand, I think, you know, calming myself down a little bit and just saying like, hey, listen, literally nobody does.
Right.
Like no one knows what they're doing. That's one thing I've absolutely learned by owning a business, is that literally no one knows what they're doing. So I did a pretty good job, I think, in the beginning of just saying one foot in front of the other. As soon as I got past the first hump of like, okay, I'm doing this thing, then it was like, okay, I need to go to the bank and open up a bank account for my business. Okay, I need to come up with a name for my business, because I literally did not have a name for the first like 3 months.
I love it.
You know, I need to go on LegalZoom and like file whatever thing I need to find to be incorporated or to be, you know, the legal side of things. I need to get a CPA. Like I did a good job about taking one step at a time and also getting the right people around me. And I think that's one of the biggest pieces of advice that I will give anybody starting a business, and that I would have told my 23-year-old self, is you don't know what you don't know. And there are people around you who do know. And so getting, you know, my dad's a lawyer, but he's had his own practice, so I was able to ask him a lot of things. My mom's a chiropractor. She has her own practice. So even though on the surface, these things have nothing to do with social media, they both have employees. They both have to pay taxes. You know, they both had to file the proper legal documents for their business. And so going to them, getting a business advisor, getting a mentor, all of that sort of thing, I think is crucial. And then also, I would say having a little bit more compassion for myself, that it's okay to not know everything in the beginning. And it's okay to, you know, make mistakes here and there, because it's literally the only way that you learn.
Right.
And this idea of, I'm going to do everything right. I mean, I still struggle with this of, I have to do everything right. And it's just not even kind of close to a reality. And sometimes the most fun moments are the ones where you make a really big mistake and you have to figure it out. It's exhilarating.
Right. I mean, that's totally true. One of the people she talks to is Morgan DeBaum, who is one of the creators of Blavity, which is like a black website. And one of the things she talked about in her section was like, my parents aren't entrepreneurs. My parents don't have that, like trying to find those resources and stuff. And like, one of the things that I think this book misses the mark on is, I think that there's an opportunity for like more intersectionality. And this book feels very like white woman privileged, kind of like, And that's who she is, I think, based on the book. But I felt like she doesn't talk about how it might be different for a woman whose family, like a family from a family of immigrants, or someone who's in a wheelchair, or someone like that, there are struggles within the like big title of being a woman, or someone who's maybe genderqueer or something like that. Like, And how do we support each other in those ways? And like, she talks a lot about like lifting up people around you, but she doesn't talk a lot about like recognizing your own privilege and being like, let me use my voice to lift up someone who isn't like me, you right. know?
Yeah.
So I felt like that was a big miss for me in this book. And like pretty much that one woman was really the only voice who even spoke about like being other from
anything
like
other. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, just you saying that, being like, yeah, that is such a nice thing, like to have like role models who do that. But for women who don't have that, like that's probably even a bigger hurdle, like right. so much harder.
Well, I mean, even you saying that, like before, you know, you said that after what I said, but I just played right into it of, you know, yeah, that I was given an advantage in terms, you know, I can say, oh, I was 23 and I'm right. a girl and I was out of college and I was making it up. But right. I can't ignore the fact that my parents had their own businesses and were right. able to give me advice, or right. that I'm in Los Angeles, or that I'm white, or right. any of those things. Right. So, you know, I do think that that is something that people should talk about more and probably right. could have been.
Yeah, I just wish it was more in this book, just because I feel like it could have made the book like a stronger representation of like women across the board.
Yeah.
Right. Like we all have our own experiences, and like your experience or my experience or whatever. Like I'm lucky. I come from a lot of privilege, and like because of that, I have less fear, I think, yeah. about failure than someone who it's like, if I fail, I lose my house. Right. Yeah. Like, so I come to the table with that kind of privilege, and we all can only speak for ourselves. But I think when you sit down to write a book about, you know, creating the career of your dreams, and there's, you know, something on here says something along the lines of like for all millennials, and like, I think you have to include a bigger range of experience, yeah. you know?
I think it leaned in really hard on women.
Yeah.
But not across the board.
Right. Not yeah. like being specific with what that means.
Right.
And you know, I get it, but I just wish there was more of it.
Yeah.
For me, like when I started The Stacks, I didn't really think that it was a business, to be honest. I kind of was like, I'm going to talk about books. Like, yay, this is going to be a fun thing that I do. And so one of the things I wish I could go back and fix was to think about the business side of what I was creating, or the potential business mm-hmm. side of what I was creating, because I didn't think it was going to be a job. Necessarily.
Right.
Or I thought, oh, if it's successful and it becomes a job, I can reevaluate then. But I didn't realize like, oh, I'm going to hit the ground running. And if it works out good and people like it and I start to like, I'm not going to have time. So now I'm like, you know, a year and a little change in being like, oh, shoot, like I need to figure this out. Like, what am I supposed to do? But the flip side of that is one of the best things I think I did for the show or for myself was just to start.
Yeah.
And she does talk about that. Like, you just got to start. And I think that if I had been worried about like, how will I make this scalable? And like, how is this a business? And where will the money come from? And all this, I never would have started, because I would have been like, I don't know. And I don't care. I just want to read. Never mind.
I think that's such a good point to bring up, is when you're starting something, because I look at, okay, when I started something social, that was my mentality. It was like, let's just start. Let's do it. Let's go. I'll figure it out as I go. I would go into meetings. They'd ask me if I could do something. I'd have no idea how to do it. I'd say yes. I'd leave the meeting and be like, I will figure this out.
Right.
And then I think in a certain way, I've lost a little bit of that along the way. Because, for example, like I've said, I'm going to start a podcast for like a year now, and I still have done nothing about it. You know, right. like from the first time we started, you know, I knew the Lady Gang, like
right.
a year ago, I've been saying I'm going to do this, and I right. haven't. And I think, yes, of course, there's a reality to, I have a business to run and my clients need me. And if push comes to shove and I have a client request versus like my own project that I'm working on, I'm always going to go with the client request.
Right.
But that being said, I think there's also this fear that's crept in a little bit with, well, now if I'm going to put something out there, it better be perfect because people mm-hmm. know me or they follow who I am. And again, I'm not that big of a it's not that. It's just this self-inflicted fear of whatever others think that, totally. Okay, if I'm going to put out YouTube content, it better be amazing. Or whereas before, my younger self would have just done it to do it. You
right.
Because
you're like, I need content.
Exactly.
Right. Like that's the same, totally the same thing here. Like, because we have an Instagram account that's like grown totally organically and it's great and I love it. But like, I used to just do stuff and be like, I'm annoyed about this thing, like in the book world, blah, blah, blah. And now I'm like, do people care?
Right.
Do I really have a point? Like, if I get like three stories in, like, what's the end? Like, so I feel like I found myself like being on my stories less.
Yeah.
Just because I'm like, I don't know. I'm doing overthinking. It wrong. Because now there's like 10,000 people who are paying attention before it was like 1,000. And I knew all of them basically.
Yeah.
So like that definitely like is something that I feel like gets in the way of creating your content or like creating your brand.
Yeah, like, it's putting, like you, just putting it out there.
Yeah,
you're putting your own out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is a bummer because in the beginning – and she does talk about that in mm-hmm. this, like talks about just like getting started and like being passionate about your creative part and like taking it seriously. And I think like so much of the business stuff can get in the way
yeah.
of the creative stuff, which is hard. How do you balance?
Right, because you can't – it's like then, you know, you can't be all creative and no business.
Right.
So I think that that's something that a lot of people struggle with. And again, it brings me back to ask for help. Yeah. Like you can't do it all yourself. And I'm learning this more and more even now. Like, okay, being a good leader means bringing out other people's strengths. It doesn't mean my way is always the right way. And sure, a lot of the time I have final say or a lot of the time I have the experience. But I'm also, you know, I never want to overlook a fresh perspective coming in and seeing things differently than what I can see with my own tunnel vision.
Right. Totally. And in this book, there's a bunch about team.
Yeah.
So how did you have a team of 11 people? So yeah. It's you plus 11.
Yeah.
How did you build your team? How do you know who to hire? How do you know when to fire? Have you had to fire? What's that like?
Yeah. So, and I think too with, you know, she talks so much about that in this book. And also one thing that I will say is that Create and Cultivate has not only it's the conferences, but it's also become a resource for people like me who don't know always how to manage those situations. Right. And I'll get into how I do it. But
wait, we should pause really quickly. Do you want to explain what Create and Cultivate is?
Yeah.
Because I didn't do it. And I think you probably know better than me.
Yeah, totally. So Create and Cultivate started as a conference. Jacqueline did like a tiny version of it in Palm Springs. And then it grew. And by the time she did her first Los Angeles one, it was already much bigger than the first. And over time has become not only conferences for women across, you know, the like in real life conferences across the country, but it's become an online resource as well with blogs and newsletters. And there's a classified section for hiring and all sorts of resources. Now Work Party became the book and the podcast, but it's really just like a community of women all over the place that have come together for whatever, you know, common desire they have to grow, to learn, to connect, to create, to cultivate
right.
their careers. And I think that, yes, there's the in real life experiences, which are the conferences themselves. And now, of course, there's a ton of conferences, but they've kind of paved the way for what that looks like in brand activations and integrations and partnerships and all of that. But their blog and newsletter also have a ton of really awesome resources that, I mean, I have found myself like doing a phone interview and kind of drawing a blank and Googling like Create and Cultivate questions asked during an interview. And within 30 seconds, I have like 10 new ones that I can ask on that phone interview. So they're a really awesome resource. But growing and managing a team is probably 50% of my day and my time and everything that I do. And it's been part of the most enjoyable experience and most stressful of running a business. Mm-hmm. Again, one foot in front of the other. I got to a point where I had a few clients in the beginning. I had more clients than I knew what to do with. I knew I was going to start forgetting things and dropping the ball on mm-hmm. things. Bam, here's my first hire. And even my first hire came in like the funniest way. I ran into a girl that I knew from my college, from USC. We were in the same sorority. She was a year older than me. We ran into each other at Cycle House, which I joke is like the center, the epicenter right. of like everything that has happened in my life. We ran into each other and we did one of those, oh, we should get lunch. And I was kind of like, yeah, whatever. But she followed up and we went to breakfast. Little did I know, she knew exactly what she was doing. She knew I had just started a company. She was interested in social media, but she was very casual about it and was like, yeah, you know, I'm doing social for my parents' accounting firm. I kind of want to get more into it. And I was like, well, I need help and, right. you know, it might be part-time, but it could be full-time. And literally I like hired her on the spot at breakfast. You know,
is
she's
still
yes, she's still with us. She's now our VP of operations. Oh my God, I love it. She's been with the company over 4 years now. And, you know, in the beginning, that's how I did almost every hire. I would literally come back to the office and be like, oops, went to coffee with this girl, hired her.
Right.
But it was I knew I needed help and I knew that it was more important that the person had the a personality that was willing to work hard, be flexible, be, you know, wear many hats, be in it, be excited, be passionate, be creative, then they actually knew the technical side of social mm-hmm. media, because I knew I could teach that.
Right.
And I think the hardest thing is, over time, you know, our first employees would spend all day, every day with me. They'd see what I was doing, see how I was responding to emails, see how I was answering calls, see how I was taking photos, doing flat lays, editing. But over time, when you have 6, 7, 8, those people can't be sitting in my office all day long, right, learning what I'm doing. So I've had to learn to empower my leadership team to then empower their team below them, and trust that they've picked up along the way enough about how we do things that they can then train others.
Right.
And finding the right people is really tough. You know, it's you have a couple hours to get to know somebody between phone interviews and in persons. And oftentimes you don't know what they're really going to be like. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And there have been many times where, luckily for me, when the relationship has really not seemed like it's going to last, it's been pretty mutual, and the person has opted to leave right around the time that I was getting ready to ask them to leave. So that's kind of worked out. But, you know, there's always a balance of what's a strike, what's a firing offense. Can I trust this person to do, you know, to step it up, or are they going to continue to make these mistakes? You know, can I trust this person in general?
Right.
And just for me, it's very hard for me. You know, I have a similar to Create and Cultivate. I have 11 girls that are between the ages of, call it, you know, 23 and 32. Mm-hmm. I'm 28.
Okay.
It is hard to remember I'm the boss. I'm not their friend.
Right.
And we have a friendly environment, and I care a lot about my team. I care so much about them, mm-hmm. but it's very hard to remember to find that balance,
right,
that line.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you're like not – it's not like what I feel like we used to think about as like the boss is like 60 and like you're right. like 15.
Right.
Like, it's not like an ice cream parlor job yeah. at the lake. Like, it's different.
In any other scenario, I'm, you know, I always joke, we go out to lunch and I'll get the bill and I'm like, what does the waiter think I am to these girls? You right. know, because to right. anyone else, like I would blend in and I would look one of the same. But right. for me, you know, not to get my feelings hurt if I'm not included in something, it's like, yeah, of course I'm not. I'm their boss. Like, I don't, you know, and my worth doesn't have to be evaluated based on whether an employee leaves or stays, or a client comes or goes. You know, right. there's a lot of that. There's a lot of the ups and downs that I just constantly remind myself, don't take it personally. It's not about you.
Right. So hard. Isn't that the hardest part?
Yeah.
It's like, don't take it personal.
Yeah.
It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it. People have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
How important is it to you to hire women?
So I get this. I've a lot of people ask me about this because
you
company
said all your employees are women. So yeah. I'm just curious if that's something that you're like really passionate about, or if it just kind of like worked out that way, or that's the industry.
So it kind of started that way where, you know, again, in the beginning, I had a lot of girls either from USC or referrals, friends of friends coming to me saying, I see what you're doing. It looks really cool. I'd love to be part of it. And then we started posting, you know, job sites or on Instagram to hire, but it was like four, then five, then six women. And it kind of got to the point where, of course, I would love for a guy to join our team. I'm definitely open to that. But I do think that we have, there's kind of a nice dynamic that's been created. I think social media kind of lends itself to, and the type of work that we do, lifestyle industry kind of lends itself to women. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, this poor guy would be stuck in a room with like, you know, 10 girls.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's not that I am not open to hiring a guy. Of course I am. But I also think that we have something kind of nice going with the way that it is now. And we have a lot of male clients too. Which creates a good balance. Like I'll go into, you know, once a week I go visit one of my clients and I sit at the office for the day and I'll look around the boardroom and it's like 15 guys and me. So, but it balances it out nicely because I go from working with all women to, you know, being in a male environment.
Is that hard being the only woman?
It's
sometimes
really not.
No.
I mean, it's always interesting to see what they say or don't say around you or the kind of jokes they make, or is there an awareness that a girl's in the room? And they're a little, you know, everyone gets a little boys clubby. But for whatever reason, it's never something that's bothered me personally. But I'm conscious about it with my team. I'll say that. I do not send, if I have a new male client or a predominantly male environment, until I've been there a few times and I know the vibe, I won't just like send one of my girls in to go handle that client for the day. Mm-hmm. And not because I think they're, you know, something's going to happen to them, but I don't know how someone's going to take a joke. I don't know how sensitive someone's going to be to a comment. And until I really can get a vibe that's not going to happen, I'm very cautious of just setting my team in.
Like protecting your people.
Yeah, I feel like I'm protecting my little cubs.
That makes sense. What about, like, she talks about a little bit about harassment in the book. Mm-hmm. It's like in her negotiation section, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
Because she talks about negotiations and it kind of starts with like what she calls like smaller negotiations. Like, will I post this on my feed or not?
Right.
Or like, will I endorse this brand? And that was the other thing about the book. I found the book to be really interesting as someone who works someone who works in media. Mm-hmm. And like you also work in media. And so I felt like I could connect to it. But I'm curious about women who work in corporate America or in other kinds of jobs who aren't so concerned about their quote unquote brand. Right. Like she talks like, you know, your reputation. I mean, obviously, like the reputation is your brand or is you. That's important. But like some of the other stuff, I'm like, this is so irrelevant if you are an accountant.
Right. Yeah. Cause it's, I read everything through the lens of what I'm doing with my world. And Jacqueline and I are very enmeshed in terms of friends, clients, relationships, our little bubble of a world. But I do think that, I mean, even when I have conversations with people about social, I recognize how much of a bubble that I'm in.
Right.
So I would be curious to know if it rang true or, you know, was relatable to people that are not in this industry.
Or if it felt like way too niche.
Right.
Because it fits in my world. Yeah. And there were some parts where I was like, you know, like it didn't, but some of it did.
Yeah.
But she talks a little bit like small negotiations about like, will I post this or will I wear this or will I endorse this or will I talk about this on my story, like politics or whatever. And these are like small negotiations. And then she kind of gets like the bigger negotiations being about like salary and raise.
Yeah.
But right before that, I think she talks about harassment and like laughing at jokes and like the good old boys club and all of that stuff. And I found that part to be really interesting because I don't know. I felt like maybe it needed its own section. Because I feel like for so many women, that's such a big part of being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Like it's such a big part of starting your own business. It's such a big part of working in corporate America. I mean, I used to manage the flywheel that I teach at currently, and flywheel's corporate, but it's not like, you know, it's not like Salesforce.
Right.
You know, like it's not that corporate. But I felt like I was constantly making negotiations, like because I'm a woman and because I'm a black woman and like the stereotypes that come with that and like being like angry and like all this stuff, I was constantly negotiating like little minor microaggressions and things that I didn't even notice until I left that role. And like, I would have loved even more like people, like she doesn't really talk about people commenting on how you look.
Yeah.
Which I think is such a huge part of being a woman working anywhere.
Yeah.
Like I work from my house when I do this podcast, so I can dress however I want and like I don't really care. But if I go to a book event, like I'm very concerned about how I look.
Yeah.
Like I'm very concerned about that. And that's someone, and like I read and I talk about books. Like I'm not asking people for millions of dollars.
Right.
Like, or if someone comments on your hair or your makeup or your body or something that you're not wearing makeup.
Right.
Like I would have just loved more of that because I feel like that's huge and that is universal for women who work.
Yeah. You know? I think that's such a good point because it was addressed in the sense of like, you know, financial negotiations or monetary or contract and things of that nature. But just looking at like a physical appearance, I mean, I know how much I think about it. And I know how much when I'm going into a meeting, it's played both sides. Like there have been times where, you know, I thought to myself, oh God, here I am, this 24-year-old blonde girl, you know, my employee that's coming with me is a 25-year-old girl. Like we're going to sit in this room with these higher ups and there's no way that they're going to take us seriously. Or, you know, oh shoot, like that my button might be too low or whatever the thing might be, you know? And then on the flip side of it, I've thought, oh, well, I'm going to walk in here and I'm going to be this young girl who's super cute. And, you know, this client's going to love that because they're going to think I get it. Like it's gone on both ends of the spectrum. Interestingly enough, I just like a fun little tidbit. I was actually a social media expert witness in a court trial.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Sorry. Sidebar for a second.
I'm obsessed.
So interestingly enough, the same way that there are medical experts, there are now social media experts needed in court cases.
My jaw is dropped.
I know.
I can't believe it.
Same, and I've done it. And I was on the stand and I was very aware of, you know, what I wore and how I dressed and being in this courtroom. And I thought it was so interesting because the women that were on my lawyers happened to be men and their lawyers happened to be women. And when I was being cross-examined, and I know it's their job, I get it. They were doing their job, but the only angle they could take, because from a technical perspective, I was so much more in the favor of, you know, my side of the case. The only angle they could take was I was young, I was blonde, and my voice. And they went in so hard on me about those things. And I remember sitting there being like, oh my God, like, yeah, that's their job, but it was this like young girl, young girl, young girl, blonde, 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 valley girl, valley girl, valley girl. And they just kept going in. And it made me think a lot about like how I carry myself and how I speak and what people can use against me and all of that. And I think it's something that, you know, it's not normally put, you're not literally put on trial for it. Like I literally was in this case. But I think that it is something that plays into being at photo shoots, being in meetings. I think about it with my team. You know, if someone's wearing a really cute outfit, but it's a crop top, I'll have to be like, you know, hey, like you can't wear that when we're going to visit a client. You have to be conscious of something like that.
Right. Yeah, no, totally. And like one of the pieces of advice she gave around like, this is more about like sexual harassment or like inappropriate jokes. She gave this piece of advice that was just like, because she kind of walks through like, okay, what can you do as a woman?
Right.
And like the first thing was like, you don't have to do anything. It's not your responsibility to like confront a harasser like if it makes you uncomfortable. But she's like, if you feel like you can, one of the easiest things to do is just to say, can you, what did you say?
Repeat that. I thought that was
really
interesting.
And I was like, that's so fucking true, because I've been in situations where people have made jokes, not about me being, well, sometimes me being a woman, but also sometimes like racist things or like slightly racist things or overtly racist things. And I've been like, wait, what? And like, that is, it works pretty much every time unless you're dealing with an actual jerk, like a major,
like a lunatic,
like someone who's just like really just like doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
But like, I thought that was so good because I'd never really thought about it, but I can think of two times where I have done that and I've been like, wait, what? Oh, okay, cool, cool, cool. Thanks, thanks, thanks. Because either they'll say it again and like kind of do it sheepishly, or they'll be like, oh, no, no, it's just a joke.
I'm that's like, oh, okay. I actually took note of that also. And I thought the concept of like, oh, what did you say? Or oh, what was that? Is such a good,
it's such a good one.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people say jokes thinking like it's going to land and they're so cute and funny. And then you call them on it like in such a subtle way, like, oh, I didn't even, oh, what? Like, I'm not even paying attention to you.
Yeah.
It's like can be really jarring for someone who's like obsessed with making other people feel small.
Right.
So I really thought that was good.
Yeah.
One of the other like huge things that I think comes up in this book is money.
Yes.
I would have loved more money.
Yes, me too.
Because she talks about like we need to talk about our salaries and we need to talk about how we make money and bonuses and our contracts and all that stuff. And I wish that there was like more nitty gritty on that, because I still am like, I don't know. Like podcasting is like, while there are major podcasts out in the world, it is still kind of wild, wild westy. Like, because anyone can make it from their house or from wherever. And like, so like, I don't know how much other people get for their ads. And like, I don't know how much, you know, and like, I don't know what I should be asking for. Or like, I don't know what I should be asking for on my social media part. Or like, you know, like there's all this stuff. And I would have just loved more of like, how do you figure it out? Like, how do you know? Like, how did you figure out this is what I should be charging for a post? Or this is what I should be charging for a post and a story?
Right.
So, or this is what I should tell my clients to charge for those things or whatever.
I thought that was such a good discussion. And again, same thing. I would have wanted more of it. And I think it's actually something that when I first even met Jacqueline was something that I was like, oh, okay. Like she gets that side of things in the negotiation, you know?
Right.
But I think part of the problem is that I think people are like, they don't want to ruin it for themselves or anybody else. So let's say, you know, there's two sides of it. There's either, oh, I'm way undercharging and I don't want to admit to somebody else that I have this amazing client and I'm so cool. But, oh, by the way, the only reason I have them is because I'm charging them like $2.
Or I don't know my worth.
Or I don't know my worth. And then on the flip side, you don't want to like, you know, what if a big brand was paying you for your podcast ads and they're just not savvy and they don't get it and they're paying you like quadruple what they should be paying you.
Right.
You don't want to expose that because then you don't want that to stop. So, you know what I mean? So I think there's both sides of it. And, you know, we always – that the game that's so funny to me is like – when you're waiting on a proposal or you're waiting to sign a proposal and it's kind of like, who's going to be the first person to say the range? Because you just don't know. There are some people who think $2,000 a month is right. And there are other people that think, oh yeah, we budgeted $15,000 a month. And you know, who's to know? So I was very concerned with one of my biggest fears when I first started signing proposals was if I go too high, they're just going to say no. And I have learned over time that if you go too high, most of the time they come back and they say, okay, well, that's out of our budget. What can you do for blank? Not always. It has happened a couple times where they go, oh, you know what? You're too expensive for us and we don't want to undervalue you. So goodbye. And I'm like, damn it. I should have made it lower. Right. But then most of the time when you make an accommodation and you give them, you know, a discounted rate, you end up doing more work and you resent them and it doesn't end up working anyways.
Does it ever happen where you go high and they say, okay, but if we're going to pay you for this, we also need X, Y, and Z?
Yes, that has happened. Definitely. And then you, again, I have to decide, okay, well, is it, you know, I went high. So yeah, it's worth it to me to do X, Y, and Z because it's worth it to me. And also in my industry, like having a big name client can go a long way. So there have been times where a bigger client has had a smaller budget for whatever reason. And I say, okay, I have to think of like the difference as like marketing dollars because I can now market that I've worked with this brand.
Right.
But you can't do that for everybody. So, you know, it's tough because then I have friends that are clients that are friends. And what if they talk? And what if, you know, I do have standards for the way that we bill, but there's always accommodations or there's always, you know, okay, well, can we do this? And what about that? And
like how much you're willing to bend.
Exactly.
Before you're going to break.
Yes. Yes.
That's so interesting. Can I ask this? And this is like general.
Yeah.
If you're okay with answering, you can say no. But if for like on average, kind of in the world, for someone who has a strong following, let's say like 300,000 celebrity type person, and they are drinking a new kombucha. So like not Coke, but not like healthy, let's say, like, you know, like what is something like that run?
Okay, so it's a great question. The most basic formula for it is $100 per 10,000 followers.
Okay.
So if I have $20,000, I mean 20,000 followers, you could say, okay, that person's getting paid $200 per post.
Got it.
Now, that doesn't take into consideration, well, I have an engagement rate that's crazy, or I have a niche audience that is obsessed with anything that I post and in health and wellness. So me posting kombucha is going to have that much more of an impact than some other random lifestyle blogger posting kombucha. So, you know, we've seen, I mean, we get rate cards for influencers that are all over the board. It's crazy. But the basic rule of thumb is $100 per 10,000 influencers. So you can assume that person with 300,000 followers is getting paid $3,000.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And like if you're doing more than just a post on your Instagram, if you're then doing a story, like you have to make a recipe or whatever,
then
it could be more.
And if you're creating a video too, like a recipe, that's a great point. Okay, well, if I'm creating a video and you're able to use this on your social channels, that's another $1,500 for me to do the video.
Because I need to have all my team and the camera and the da-da-da-da.
Yep.
Okay, I'm just always curious, like,
because
I know some people do make, like, crazy bank.
Millions.
Like so much
millions.
Money. Not to talk about The Bachelor again, but those people,
it's
their whole life.
Crazy.
And
they make
like,
millions.
I don't follow any of them because I don't like all their Sean Con, but I watch their television program. I just been very curious about that.
And brands are not that savvy yet. So you have some that are like spending crazy amounts of money because they just don't know any better. And they have some in-house marketing person being like, we should work with influencers.
Right. And then, we have this much money. We should
spend it. And then on the flip side of it, you have people who are savvy who are like, well, let's do a partnership or let's do a capsule. I mean, that's why you see all these capsule collections now. It's like a brand that already exists says, hey, so-and-so, we're going to do a sunglass line that's, you know, at Cali X, this sunglass line, so that it's basically like my own collection, but I'm not actually having to do anything other than maybe I design it, maybe I put my name on it, maybe I name each pair of sunglasses, whatever. Some are more involved than others, and some are super involved in their designing their own pieces.
Okay.
But the easiest way to do it is to slap somebody's name on it, and you know, it's a limited edition collection of the Cali sunglasses.
Oh, that's very smart.
Yeah.
I want the Cali sunglasses.
Right? Sunglass brands, hit me up.
That's very smart. Well, what advice from this book stuck out to you? Were there any nuggets where you were like, this?
I think as a theme, and I can definitely, you know, pull out little lines, but I think the theme of it that stuck out to me the most was that, like, I'm not alone in the feelings that I've experienced and the ups and downs and the good and the bad. And sometimes I can get a little eye-rolly at, you know, the entrepreneur's journey is up and down and, you know, you're going to have failures and successes, but like, look at where we are. Like, okay, I get it sometimes.
Right.
But the truth is when I'm like sitting at my desk being like, oh my God, like I messed this up, or how am I going to do that? Or this person's doing that. Like, there is a feeling of like, I'm the only one that's going through this and I'm the only one that's experiencing this. Mm-hmm. And throughout the book, to just read and then hear the stories towards the end of like, it was an exhale moment for me of like, I'm really not alone in this. There are so many women that have experienced all of the small things. Like there were a lot of little baby, almost insignificant, you know, similarities that I would right. hear that I was like, oh man, okay. Like there are other people that get this. And it actually was also a good reminder of me to like open up to being honest about how certain things are for me and open up a little bit more of that and get like knock down the facade of like, it's all good. It's all good. It's all good. Right. You know?
Yeah. That's, I think that's true. I think kind of in that same vein, I was really struck by the like, well, imposter syndrome is like,
oh yeah,
destroys me at all times.
Oh yes.
But I think one of the things that also stuck out with me was like the negative feedback, people who copy,
yeah,
like all of that stuff, or like being jealous of other people who are doing what I'm doing or doing similar things. Like that is all something that I really struggle with because I'm so competitive. And I want to be perfect and I want to be – I don't even want to be perfect. I just want to be great and I want to be successful and I want like people to be like impressed by me, like, which is, you know, not why I do it, but that's like one of the – like I want that feedback.
Totally.
So like I've had people who've sent like really mean, like nasty – comments or like messages to me, not like, not even like, Tracy, you're an idiot, like not like mean like that, but like little things, like call, like using words to like describe, like saying like I'm divisive or something, which I'm like, that's like hurtful to me because that's not what I'm doing,
right?
Or like saying like, you know, you could do it this way and it wouldn't be, you know, blah blah blah, or like things like that. That's been really hard. So she talked a little bit about that, or like also seeing people who like take your posts and like stealing your posts or whatever.
Yeah,
that's always really hard too, because it's like, I worked hard on this, or like coming, like I try to come up with fun things for my listeners like to engage with, and then I hear other people are doing it and I'm like, ugh,
yeah,
get your own creativity, this is killing me.
Totally.
And she talks about kind of like, you know, you have to let it go. And like some of it's like there's enough room at the table, which I do believe. And I think that if someone came to me and said, can I steal this? I'd be like, yeah, sure. Will you just tag me? And I'd be like, yeah, sure. I don't care. But it's like I wake up and I see like something that I posted on someone else's account. And I'm like, if you just would have asked, I would have been like, yes, I'd be honored. You know,
I totally am glad you brought this up, because I've had so many instances of that happening. And on the like logically, I know there's enough to go around. Like, mm-hmm. I know there are enough businesses. I mean, you look at talent agencies, PR firms, beverages, like there's so much competition. Right. And I'm looking at like five companies.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So on the one hand, yes, there's enough room to go around, but it's been very it's been a journey for me and a practice of like tunnel vision, stay in my lane. Don't look at what everybody else is doing, mm-hmm. because it's so easy for me to go, oh, I talked to that client or that company got them. But then 2 months later, their client comes to us. So it's it's just par for the course. It's part of what it is, but it's been an ongoing thing for me to work on, as well as the imposter syndrome of like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not smart enough to be in this room. They know better. They're older. They're smarter.
Right. They're a huge company. So of course they know.
Of course they
know. Even though they never know.
Even though they never know. And there's a reason that they're trying, you know, to hire me.
Right.
I've been really lucky. I have a business advisor that's been very supportive to me kind of from the beginning. And he was constantly like, Callie, you know more about this subject than anybody else that's in the room. You just have to know that.
Right.
Like, you got to go in with that mentality.
That's so hard, though.
It's hard. And with the reposting of your content, like, I find it interesting that other social media agencies will post something social's photos.
Right.
And I'm like, listen, if you're like an inspo account or something, like, by all means, go for it. But I actually had a very weird situation where a girl called us to help do part of a project for one of her clients. She doesn't really do as much influencer stuff as we do, so she brought us in. And I go to her website and I'm reading the website and I'm like, this is word for word. It's word for word our website. This is so strange, because she came to me,
right?
But it was literally verbatim.
And then what do you do?
So I called her and I was like, listen, I gotta tell you, I went on your website and it's word for word our site. Like, I don't know if you had somebody else build this and you weren't part of it and you just didn't notice, like giving her the benefit of the doubt. And she was like, I'm so sorry. It was my web developer. I had no idea. I took it down. You know, anyway, so the list goes on for situations like that that occur. But I do think that we all have to be very conscious of, like, what's the difference between, listen, it's social media and we all post the same things. And, like, what's a blatant stealing of somebody else's work?
Right. You know? Like, and they do talk about in the book, like, some of the other women. And I think also Jacqueline talks about, like, you know, it doesn't matter if someone steals everything that you do. Like, your heart and your passion for what you've created will come through, because it's, like, you can't – like, the dry bar girl, what's her name? Allie Webb?
Yes.
She was like, there's other people who try to do dry bar, but there's a reason why we have 85 locations. Like, her work ethic and her passion for the blowout or whatever is what makes them successful. So,
right.
Like, that's the other thing. It's like, I have to remember, someone can copy, like, one of my ideas, or someone can copy one of my posts or whatever, but, like, I'm still creating new ideas as I go. And, like, they're not going to be ahead of me. If they're trying to steal my thinking, they're going to have to wait for me to put my thinking out into the world.
Right.
So you're never going to be ahead of what I'm doing.
And to remember that, like, and I, you know, no one else is you.
Exactly.
And the one thing that you bring to the table that nobody else does is you. And so if you're, like you just said, if you're constantly innovating and you're changing and you're adjusting and pivoting, that is your way of staying on top of, you know, what everybody else is doing or copying you.
Totally. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I really wanted to touch on from this book. Was there anything else that stuck out for you?
I think another thing that I thought it was interesting that the take it from them was how it kind of ended. I mean, I know that there was like a little
– there was like the little like
little
10 commandments,
kind of chapter at the
which
end.
I like. That was like a nice summation.
I loved that actually. And I think, you know, I almost wish that like the take it from them was kind of mixed throughout rather than a whole section.
Like each chapter had a different take it from them. That would have been good, like, to break it up.
Yeah, just because then I was like, wait a minute. Like, I, you know – I was listening to your story and then it felt like it abruptly shifted.
Yeah.
But looking at the Ten Commandments, like, the thing that she keeps saying that I think is so important is be a pleasure to work with.
That is the number one.
I'm so glad that she brought this up time and time again and that it was a theme throughout the book and that she talked about her team being a pleasure to work with, because you can like, I mean, I've had clients say to me verbatim, like, your team is such a pleasure to work with and we'll figure out the creative. Like, if it's not gelling, we'll get that part handled. Mm-hmm. But because we enjoy working with you so much, that's what's going to make us stick as like a long-term client.
Yeah.
And I think that goes, you know, I don't know if it's talked about enough. I don't know what the situation is, but I think I've always said to my team, like, if the only thing that somebody says about you when you leave a photo shoot or you leave a meeting is like, they were really nice, they treated us well, they were respectful, like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Because you could be the most talented photographer, but if you're an asshole, like, I'm never hiring you again.
Right.
You know?
Right. And like, everyone else knows shit happened.
Yeah.
Like, even if you feel like I've failed in this moment, or like that photo shoot went terrible and I failed and I had a zit and this was a nightmare.
Yeah.
And if you can still like be a nice enough person, then everyone else is like,
whatever.
Nobody even saw the zit. Like,
yeah,
it was fine. The lighting was great. Nobody cares. But if you make that the nightmare for everyone else, they're gonna remember that you're an asshole.
Yep.
Like, they're still not gonna remember the zit. Nobody cares. They're just gonna be like, she was a jerk.
So true.
I do think that, like, that your you are your reputation, and like, your reputation goes with you. And so if you're a jerk in the beginning, people that you worked with in the beginning are gonna remember that you're a jerk. Even if you then get successful and you can chill out, which doesn't happen, that's a lie. But even if that did happen and you could chill out and be so nice and bake everyone cookies or whatever, like, those 100 people that you worked with in the beginning who hate you because you made them feel small and stupid, they're gonna remember that.
Yeah.
And like, they now have successful companies too and they don't wanna be around you. So I think that, like, I do think that, like, being a pleasure to work with is huge.
So important.
It's huge. And that's also part of, like, there's room at the table.
Yeah.
You know, like, I do believe that there's room at the table, but part of being a pleasure to work with is also like being respectful and asking before you take someone else's stuff.
Right.
Right. Or like, can you help me? Cause like, I love helping people. I love to talk. I have a podcast. Of course I love to talk. I'd love to give you advice about something that I know nothing about. But like, if you're a jerk or you don't give me credit or you don't value my time or you're late to our meeting or whatever, like, I'm going to remember that and I'm not going to want to help you. Because, like, I can hold a grudge.
Yeah.
Which is terrible, but it's true about
me. I get it. And I think too, like, my team always makes fun of me because they joke that I literally know everyone, because in some weird capacity, everyone that I'm on an email with has some connection to this girl that used to go here, that went to high school with him. You know, like, it's a small world. Right. And I think she also does a good job in this book of talking about, like, making those connections at the beginning, and you never know what's going to happen with them. You never know what's going to come back around. Like, I've had so many times where, like, I didn't get a client and I was super bummed. And then, you know, 2 years later, that guy is now working for a different company and comes back to me being like, we made a mistake in hiring the other company. Now that I'm at this business, we want to hire you. Right. Had I been an asshole because he didn't choose my business, this wouldn't have happened. So totally. I think it's so important to remember that, like, connections come back around. LA, I mean, I know there's not just Los Angeles listeners, but, like, every place is a very smaller than you think it is.
Right. And probably places that are not LA are even smaller
even
than we
smaller.
Think it is.
Yeah, totally.
Right.
And she does, you know, she does highlight that with, you know, having these friendships that maybe started when you couldn't get something from each other, or it wasn't like somebody, you know, was a value add. You just liked them as a human and come back around, and you have no idea how big of an impact they can have.
Well, like, my person like that is Becca Tobin. Because we were friends in New York. Her friend from high school was someone that I went to college with, and we met when we were 18, and we, like, met smoking hookah, and, like, we loved each other and whatever. And that's now, you know, 15 years ago. Like, I've known Becca for 15 years. And now, you know, like, she was the person who was like, we should put the sacks on Lady.
Yeah.
And, like, I obviously wasn't like, let me become friends with this girl now because I think one day she'll be on Glee and then have a podcast that's super successful. Right. But, like, we've been friends forever. And, like, when Becca moved to LA, we had moved a few months before, and she lived in our guest room on her mattress on our floor. Oh. Like, but that's one of those things that's like, she is one of those people in my life that, like, I can turn to her and she can come to me.
Yeah.
And, like, it was never about what we could get from each other, because neither of us ever had anything. Right. And now it's like, we're kind of adults.
Now.
And it's like, my God, Becca did this. Like, it makes me cry because I'm, like, so lucky to have this relationship in my life, because, like, look what Becca was able to do. But it was never like, oh, I'm going to keep Becca around because she got cast on Glee. And, like, Kitty or whatever. Was that Kitty? Yeah, Kitty.
Yeah.
Like, so it's true. Like, you make these friendships. But that's how you are here today.
Right.
I was like, Becca, because I need someone. And she was like, oh, my God, you'll love Callie. It'll be great. But, it, you know, like, that's how these things all happen and come together. And, like, I love to connect people. Like, I always am like, I'm such a connector. Like, I love it. But it's because I get so much joy when someone connects me, you know. And it's like, we have to, like, that's part of, like, your reputation is who you are, and, like, you are your brand. It's like, the things that are you're passionate about, you have to make sure that that's important in your company.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's not just about beautiful pictures. Like, if you're passionate about, you know, animals or whatever, like, giving back or whatever it is, like, that has to be reflected in the work that you do, because that's what makes you, like, authentic.
Yeah.
Right. Like, versus just talking about books.
Right.
Or, like,
and I think that's what, like, true authenticity is. And that word gets thrown around a lot these days. But being authentic to who you are and what matters to you and your relationships, and, you know, not faking it because somebody can get you something. People can see through that. But to your point, like, just having those, like, real human connections is what ultimately, I think, raises everybody up. And I think that's what she's getting at when it comes to, like, the collaboration over competition tagline, which is, like, we can all collaborate and we can support each other and not have to go to that, like, scarcity, there's not enough to go around mentality.
And competition is also really good and healthy. Like, there is a place for collaboration and competition if it comes from the right place. It's like that scary competition.
Right.
Right? Like, I have to cut you down to get ahead.
Right.
But, like, there's nothing better for me. Like, there's some other book podcasts out there that I, like, you know, keep my eye on, and I'm like, oh, shit, they just did this thing.
Yeah.
Like, they got, like, written up on this thing. Like, okay. Like,
I got to step it up.
I got to
motivating.
This.
Yeah.
And, like, that is competition that, like, works for me, you know? And, like, that's really powerful too. And, like, when I have friends who are in totally different industries who have these successful moments, I'm like, okay, Tracy, like, game time.
Yeah.
Like, let's go. And obviously I'm also like, come on my podcast. Like, let's collaborate, you know? But, like, sometimes I feel like people – and I'm not saying Jacqueline did this, but sometimes I feel like people, like, competition is bad.
Right.
And for some people, it is. It fuels me, and it can be negative for me, but it's something that I am, you know? And for some people, it does not work.
But if you use it in the right way, yeah. It's so true. It's like, okay, I got to keep my eye on the ball, right. You know, and I can't get lazy. I can't get complacent. I got to like keep innovating.
And like one of the things that I also think in this book that is really good and like I think we know, quote unquote, now, especially like with like this movement towards like feminism and like uplifting women, is that we have to like hire each other and support each other. Yeah. But I think she does a really good job of like really saying that expressly and not just assuming that people know that, but like saying, I got this thing because of this other woman who shouted me out, or like the Geronimo balloon woman was I got $30,000 of orders because someone posted about me on their social media who had a big following. And I think we forget like, sometimes we can offer other people something that's not just money.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes, like if you have a huge following and you love X, Y, and Z, like shouting that out organically, authentically, that goes a long way.
Yeah.
And it takes so little.
And I've seen it happen. I mean, we've had so many people that, you know, have supported us or that we've supported or sent us referrals. And like, I take those very seriously because without them and without the backing and the support of like other credible people in the space, like you don't grow.
Totally,
you can't.
Totally. Well, we have to wrap up, but we have to talk about the cover and the title.
Oh, yeah.
So you Let's and I have different covers, which you guys will see in the Instagram post.
We do.
You'll see the two covers. Callie has the hard back and it has Jacqueline on it. And it kind of has like a swirly font. And she has like some pink fuzzy shoes on that are super cute and her little black outfit. And it's a cute cover. My cover is the paperback. And I don't like it very much. It's pink also, but it has like black work, outline party. It's just like very blah. It doesn't have a vibe.
Yeah, mine's much cuter than yours.
Mm-hmm. It is.
No, but I do. I like the hard back. The hard cover is much more. It speaks to me. I almost wish they kept the font for Work Party on the paperback.
It would have been – the font on yours is much more – has much more of a personal – I'll take a picture side by side also to put in our story for the day this episode comes out so you guys can see it. What do you think of the title? Work Party, How to Create and Cultivate the Career of Your Dreams.
Okay, so the way that they – I think it's – we need to talk about the way that they launched Work Party because – an Instagram account was made called Work Party.
Okay.
Very, very vague. There was no mention of what it was other than that it was powered by Create and Cultivate. So you knew it was from Create and Cultivate, but it just said Work Party.
Mm.
And I've seen like a teaser campaign, but this one lasted for months on end.
Really?
Like months and months and months of posting Work Party, Work Party, Work Party, Work Party, to the point where I was like, are they like reinventing the way that like humans exist? Like it was such a long lead up. It became a running joke with like, you know, a couple people that we were all very excited to hear what it was. It wasn't like in a, you know, talking badly way. We were just like, we DM'd the post to each other being like, what is it? Like, what is it gonna be?
Oh my God.
And so I think that the way that they titled Work Party went beyond the title of a book and made it more of a movement, which is, I think, the intention of the title. It's also the title of the podcast.
Right.
So in that sense, if you're not isolating it as just a book title, I think they did a really good job with naming it Work Party because it seemed like a movement.
Yeah. That's, see, this goes to the same thing of like, does this book age well?
Right.
And I don't know because I didn't know any of that backstory.
Right.
I actually really like the title. I think Work Party is like kind of cute and fun. And I was like, I'm interested in this.
Yeah.
Like, and I like it more than like Girl Boss or like I'm glad that it wasn't just like it. The book is like feminine enough being like pink.
Yes.
You know, like I feel like it didn't need to be like ladies who lead.
Right.
Or like I don't know, whatever thing it would be. So I felt like I kind of liked that it was like Work Party. But again, if you don't know that backstory,
then out of context.
It's a little out of context. Yep. And like I wasn't familiar with this book until this year. It came out last year.
Yeah.
So like I'm very late. And even if I went back to the Work Party Instagram, I'm sure it's not
that
anymore anyways. And I thought that subtitle was cute, How to Create and Cultivate the Career of Your Dreams, because she's Create and Cultivate. So I was like, good brand placement.
Yeah.
It's a pretty straightforward title.
Yeah. And I think it goes – I mean it definitely is very like career focused.
Yeah.
But I think it also like – a sub, you know, or like an alternate subtitle could have just been like kind of almost like one woman's story of like taking it from here to there type of thing and like what you can learn from it. I don't know how succinct you would have get that because it's not just an advice book. It's a narrative. And I think that's what you were saying is like there's a lot of personal story and – and whatnot. So maybe that could have been hinted at in the subtitle
one,
a little bit.
Like how Jacqueline Johnson created and cultivated the career of her dreams or something. Mm-hmm. And how you can too.
Yeah.
Like, be like Jacqueline. is there anything else you want to throw out or add before we hop off?
I mean, it was just so nice to discuss it with someone else too. And so I love your points of view and hearing it from like a reader's perspective, I think is also, you know, it's really great.
Yeah. So. Well, I love talking about this book with you also. And again, the book is Work Party by Jacqueline Johnson. If you haven't read it yet, you should read it. If this sounds like something you're interested in, if you're an entrepreneur or you want to be, or you've started your own company or you're thinking about starting your own company, or you work in a really male-dominated world or not, or any of those things, I would recommend this book. Again, it's such a quick, easy read.
Yeah.
It's not like a beautiful, poetic, you know, set of essays. Like, it's very casual. But if that sounds like something you'd be into, definitely check it out, because I was sweetly surprised. All right. Well, that's all. Thank you, Callie, so much for being here.
Thank you.
And we'll see you guys in the stacks. Okay. We've come to the end of the road today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And thank you again to Callie Cholodenko for joining us. Thank you also to Jean Ann Rose and Rachel Brenner and the folks over at Gallery Books for sending us a copy of Work Party. Everything we talked about today can be found in the show notes. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. To join The Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show and more, go to patreon.com/thestacks and join the fun. Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please take a moment to rate and review this show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tegeerajis. This podcast was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas. I will see you in the stacks.
Have you ever wondered how to say good morning in Italian? Or what is goodbye in French? You can ask Alexa. Just say, what is happy birthday in German? Or how do you say hello in Japanese? Do you want to know how to say I love you in Spanish? Ask Alexa and start learning a new language today.